This is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Colson Whitehead was on the cover of Time magazine in July of 2019. His new book, The Nickel Boys, set in the Jim Crow era, came out that month, too. People were still talking about his remarkable novel from 3 years earlier, The Underground Railroad. That book won the National Book Award and the Pulitzer Prize. Colson Whitehead became one of only 6 writers to ever have won both awards for the same novel, and only the 2nd writer of color in that category, joining Alice Walker for The Color Purple. Colson Whitehead was in the Insight studio in March of 2017 after the National Book Award news, but before the Pulitzer Prize had been awarded.
I had a contract for a book that was maybe a little bit obvious. It was about a Brooklyn writer going through a midlife crisis, and that sounded kind of dumb in retrospect. And so it seemed maybe if I've been avoiding this book about slavery for so long, maybe the hard thing is the thing I should be doing. And I finally committed to it, and I think it worked out pretty well.
Your very first book, though, The Intuitionist, did address race and race relations in a way. But I've heard you say that before, that the concept of slavery either seemed too big or scared you off.
I knew in order to do the ideal justice, I would have to just go deeply, so much into the history of slavery and how it worked. And it is very daunting. I mean, I think, like a lot of people my age, I first came to slavery through Roots. My parents made us all watch it in front of the TV. I studied it in college, American history. But coming to it as a 40-something with kids, it's very different. Imagining my kids seeing me beaten, their mother assaulted, sold off, tortured, and vice versa. The stakes were much higher, and I didn't feel just psychologically ready to delve into that for a long time.
I've heard you say that your parents would teach you about big concepts that way, that watching Roots on TV must have been a way a lot of American families accessed history.
I think, we don't learn a lot about slavery or a lot of different things in elementary school. I think we sort of fail when it comes to addressing the histories of marginalized people. I mean, it's sad that television and films do become a way of starting a conversation, but at least that conversation is getting started.
Cora, in your book, gives us the experience of slavery. There have been many stories recently, our contemporary movies and books talk a lot about slavery. And by the way, why do you think that is? Why do you think now?
It's hard for me to step back, but I mean, it is actually really few. I mean, it's like 2 TV shows and a movie and my book. So I don't think so.
At the moment.
Yeah.
But when you broaden it out over the last couple years.
I think in terms of, books and movies, I think that there's more African-American artists. And I think eventually you're going to address your own history. And so I think there's more of us having access in terms of through more TV opportunities and film opportunities. I think it's more just numbers than necessarily something in the culture.
So Cora, in her escape, goes state to state on this underground railroad, literally with rails and cars. And each state delivers her to a different, portal?
The Underground Railroad is a literal railroad. And then the second sort of complicating thing in the story is that each state that Cora goes through is a different state of American possibility, sort of like Gulliver's Travels, critiquing a different part of our country's history. South Carolina has its own political scheme, North Carolina. And in that way, the book's not just about someone running north, escaping slavery. It's about different parts of American history and race and freedom. It's not a straightforward historical novel. I'm not like in some historical novelist union where I have to tell the truth. For me, as a fiction writer, making up things is the fun part. And so my theory was that I wouldn't stick to the facts, but I would stick to the truth and sort of a larger American truth as opposed to one individual story of escape.
But she's such a gripping character. And the people around her that spend time or history with her, Colson, get taken in. I read and hear people talking about the book, and these characters get embedded in us. And I felt very invested in where her life is going to go. And I get the sense that for you, the story was about the railroad and the metaphor and the bigger picture of what was happening. So how is it to hear how personally your characters are affecting people?
It's one thing to have a big idea, but you also want the characters who engage with that idea to be credible and relatable, or you want to empathize and sympathize with them. And so in trying to figure out what kind of personality could escape slavery. You know, tens of millions of people were in bondage, and only a small fraction were able to escape. A bigger number were able to conceive but couldn't pull it off. But what kind of bravery does it take to leave the plantation knowing that you could be killed if you're captured? And that means having a really dynamic and brave and complex main character. And so that's Cora. And, you know, her journey is not just going to the North. It's also becoming a person, because when you're a slave, you're an object. You have no agency. You're a piece of property. And as she goes from state to state, going more and more north, she becomes more of a person. And her idea of herself gets enlarged. And her idea of freedom changes. And the reader is along for the ride.
Would you read from one of the jobs she gets and put it in context?
So she's in South Carolina. And South Carolina has a seemingly very benevolent attitude towards black people. They've taken slaves out of bondage, bought them from their masters, given them housing and jobs and education. And in this section, Cora is working in a museum, the Museum of Natural History, and she's in an exhibit where she's a human player in a diorama of different parts of history, one about Africa, one about life on a slave ship, and one about plantation life. And of course, it's very sanitized because we don't necessarily look at history head on. So she walks around as a character in these different sort of tableaus of American history. The stuffed coyotes on their stands did not lie, Cora supposed, and the ant hills and rocks in the exhibits told the truth of themselves. But the white exhibits contained as many inaccuracies and contradictions as Cora's three habitats. There had been no kidnapped boys swabbing the decks and earning pats on the head from white kidnappers. The enterprising African boy on the slave ship diorama, whose fine leather boots she wore, would have been chained below decks, swabbing his body in his own filth. Slave work was sometimes spinning thread, yes. Most times it was not. No slave had ever keeled over dead at a spinning wheel or been butchered for a tangle. But no one wanted to speak on the true disposition of the world, and no one wanted to hear it. Certainly not the white monsters on the other side of the exhibit at this very moment, pushing their greasy snouts against the window, sneering and hooting. Truth was a changing display in a shop window, manipulated by hands when you weren't looking, alluring and ever out of reach. And so as she gets this job and becomes more of a person, she can critique the kind of version of history that the museum is presenting. And dramatizing that is very important to me, having her become less of an object and more of a person.
Before that, when she's in Georgia, you have a mother-daughter-grandmother relationship. You have the three women who grew up and were on that plantation and their shared possession being the garden. So that's her small world, and that's where we're first introduced. Then you describe South Carolina. She goes next to North Carolina, and the way that state is handling slavery is completely different.
If South Carolina is a seemingly benevolent white paternalistic state, North Carolina's scheme is that it's a white supremacist state. And so I take the sort of natural progression of what happens with Jim Crow laws, separate but equal, and draw in some imagery from Nazi Germany. And take a little bit of Oregon history. Oregon was founded as a white separatist state, and African Americans couldn't live, own, or work there until 1925, which seems crazy. You know, in playing with history, I can take different moments from America, from Europe, and put them in conversation with each other. The book does have a larger conversation with how the world works and how oppression works. In Nazi Germany, the racial theorists were reading the American eugenicists from the 19th century, and they got a lot of their ideas from how we oppressed people in the 19th century. For me, oppression is one continuum.
You're often asked in interviews if current events were shaping your writing of the book, but I think the question should be reversed, and that was really, how were those events, the events you write about in their real form, informing what's happened since or what's happening today?
It is very strange, because when the book came out, people would ask me, oh, was this influenced by Black Lives Matter or what happened in Ferguson? And for me, it's no. I mean, we do have these periodic conversations about police brutality every couple of years, and then we forget about them, and then something else happens, and that seems to be a process of how we deal with them. And so it felt very separate. And then after the election of Trump, it seems we have a renewed engagement with white supremacy. So the last few months have changed definitely my interpretation of the book. I thought I was maybe closing a conversation about a certain time in our history. And of course, we move forward and we move back and we move forward. And, you know, we take these lumbering steps into our better selves.
Throughout the book, there are slave ads. Are those real?
They are real. A couple years ago, University of North Carolina digitized a lot of runaway slave ads from North Carolina newspapers from the 1820s. In the same way that if your dog runs away, you might put an ad in the laundromat. If your slave runs away, you put an ad in a newspaper saying, $10 reward for my slave, Bessie. She has these kind of distinguishing marks. As a fiction writer, I like making things up, but the language of the ads was so perfect, I could never compete. They're only 8 lines, but they contain so much. Bessie ran away for no reason at all. And of course, we know why she ran away. She has a mark on her arm from a burn. And of course, we think, how'd she get that burn? It really, for me, made clear just how so many people were implicated in slavery, even if you didn't own slaves. If you're a blacksmith, you're making chains, obviously, but also the wheel rims for the carts that bring cotton to market in these new cotton routes that are springing up. You're making the nails for the houses that are coming up in these new communities. So a blacksmith is implicated. A newspaper man is implicated. And it really needed so much of the country, slavery did, in order to keep it going.
I can hear people wondering out loud, what about your own history? What do you know generations back in your own family?
There's a strand of my family that I can trace through Virginia. And since the book has come out, I've had various family members who decided to fill me in because I've said I didn't know that much. In Virginia, there's a biracial indentured servant who was sold to James Madison and then had 8 kids, and that was a big branch of the family. But from my father's side, the line dies off around 1910, and obviously we didn't come here on student visas. They live and die in Florida or Alabama. Under what conditions? What were their names? You know, half of my family's history is lost in that void of slavery.
Colson Whitehead's story from the Underground Railroad is in pre-production for an upcoming Amazon Prime series titled Underground. His latest book is The Nickel Boys. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight is produced by Cody Drabble and Kate Gonzalez. We had help from Helen Barrington and Antonio Muniz. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.